Peace be with you. Friends, what is it about a face? When we meet somebody, we study that person's face. We can read so much from a person's facial expression. So much of the texture of what she's thinking or feeling or experiencing can be sensed in the face. It's kind of amazing, isn't it, when you think of just the little signals that we're able to pick up on, and we get so much of what's in that person's soul. The face kind of gives away the soul, doesn't it? Furthermore, when we want to be honest and direct, we look somebody in the face. When we resolve to meet a difficult situation, we face up to it. Talk to me, look at me, face to face, we'll say. Seeing is enormously powerful, obviously. But being seen by another is more powerful still. Standing before the face of another can be threatening, shaming, liberating, enlivening. Now, I'm talking about faces because of our first reading for this Feast of Mary, the Mother of God. And it might surprise us a little bit. It's taken from the book of Numbers, a book we don't read very often from in the liturgy. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to Aaron and his sons and tell them." That's, of course, code, isn't it? Because Aaron was the priest, and his sons now were the priestly caste. So the Lord's giving instruction to Moses how the priests ought to behave. He goes on now. "This is how you shall bless the Israelites. Say to them, 'The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord look upon you kindly and give you peace.'" Now, that blessing, of course, has come down through the ages. You hear it once in a while, even at the liturgy. It's one of the formal blessings we have in our tradition. But see how important the face of Yahweh is. Biblical religion certainly talks about our search for God. Think of the psalmist's beautiful trope. "As the deer yearns for flowing streams, so my soul yearns for you, my God." So it knows about that, certainly, the human quest for God. Much of contemporary spirituality is predicated upon this human quest. Nevertheless, the thrust of biblical religion is in the opposite direction, because the Bible is much more interested in God's quest for us. God looks upon us with love. God searches us out when we run from him. In fact, our very desire for God is predicated upon God's more primordial desire for us. That's biblical religion. Think of Psalm 139 in this context. "Lord, you search me and you know me. You know my resting and my rising. You discern my purpose from afar. Before ever a word is on my lips, you know it, O Lord, through and through." See, even before I begin to search for God, I've been found. Even as I have the merest inkling to search for God, God already knows me and has found me. Friends, I think many of us are, almost despite ourselves, deists. And it comes from our American heritage. Deism was very deep in the minds of our founding fathers, and it's come into our cultural system. What I mean is that we think of God, if we think of him at all, as a distant force, a creative power, maybe long ago, but who remains fundamentally indifferent to us and to the world. But see, deism just is not biblical religion. God knows us, loves us, searches us out, listen now, makes his face to shine upon us. He looks upon us kindly. And see, if the blessing here in the book of Numbers is right, it's in that look of God, being seen by God, that we find our peace. So listen again. The Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord look upon you kindly and give you peace. You know, Christopher Hitchens, as I record these words, died just a few days ago. He was the most prominent atheist writer of the last, let's say, 25 years. He one time commented that living in the presence of God would be like living in a permanent North Korea. His point was this place of constant surveillance, domination. Someone's always watching me. Well, okay, that's one way to imagine it, I suppose, but that's just not what the Bible is talking about at all. Think rather of the experience of being gazed upon by someone who loves you and whom you love. Well, that's not North Korea. That's not the feeling of being surveyed and oppressed and dominated. Rather, in that gaze, think of the gaze now of your husband, your wife, someone you love, the gaze of a parent. In that gaze, which is penetrating and knowing and benign, you find not oppression, but joy and peace. But think now of the look of God, the face of God. That's where we find our peace, that we are loved by the Creator of the universe, that we are known by the Creator of all things. Okay. Now, here's the question, though, if you've been following me so far. The question is, why do we have this reading on the feast of Mary, the Mother of God? And I must confess to you, when I first approached these readings, that occurred to me. Very often you can tell there's a clear relationship between the readings and a feast, or let's say the first reading and the gospel. But I must say, when I came across it, I thought, how come this reading from the book of Numbers, all about the blessing of God, the face of God, how come that is on the feast of Mary, the Mother of God? Well, here's what I think the connection is. I think it has everything to do with God's face becoming the face of a little baby. Let me say that again. So last week at Christmas, we heard from St. John, the Word became flesh. Well, that's kind of an abstract way to put it. It means the Word of God became a baby. God's face, that's to say the very essence of God, became the face of a little baby. And see, without denying for a moment everything I've just said about God's face being the source of peace, and it is, I mean, it is. Nevertheless, for us sinners, there can be something daunting about looking God in the face. Now, again, it's sort of commonsensical. When you've done something wrong, you've offended someone, right? Let's say you're a child, you've offended your parent some way. What's the last thing you want to do? The last thing you want to do is look your parent in the face, because you're ashamed. Let's say a husband has hurt his wife in some way. What's the last thing he wants to do is look her in the face? He's ashamed. That look, which is so penetrating, that look which is so soul-searching, now becomes painful if you've done something sinful. You know, it's interesting. Think about it for a second. You never feel shame in the presence of a dog. It's like you've done something wrong, and the dog looks at you. You don't really care because the dog just can't register what you've done. You're not ashamed in front of a parakeet. You know, they just don't have the capacity. But you do feel shame in the presence of someone who understands the difference between right and wrong. And when you've sinned, the last place you want to look is in the face, especially of the person you've harmed. And that's why in the Bible, Adam and Eve, having sinned, do what? They turn away from God. Adam and God, in the symbolic language of Genesis, walked in easy fellowship in the garden before the fall. But after the fall, Adam hides himself in the underbrush of the garden. The idea is he doesn't want to look God in the face. See, here's the tragedy of it. The very place where we find our peace, allowing God's face to bathe us in its peace and love, that very place where we find peace, we turn away from it. It's why, you know, in the Old Testament, over and over again, we hear that people are afraid to look God in the face. See, that's why. That's why. They'll be devoured. They'll be destroyed by it. But the good news of Christianity, more precisely of Christmas, is that God has become one of us. More precisely, a little innocent baby. Now, think for a second. I don't care who you are. You're a saint or you're the worst sinner. When you see a baby, the last thing you think about is turning away, right? People delight in babies. A baby's brought into a room. Everybody lights up. Everyone comes over. What do they want to do? They want to look down into the face of the baby, right? In fact, we get a special delight out of the way babies react to things. If they smile, especially, we just delight in that. And again, I don't care if you're a saint or you're the worst sinner, you delight in looking at the baby's face. The good news of Christmas, and it's so important now in the feast of Mary, the Mother of God. Imagine now Mary holding that baby, the Christ child, and bringing the baby into the room. What do you want to do? You want to look him in the face. It's in the face of God that we indeed find our peace. The trouble is in our sin, we're afraid to look at God. You see what God did? What a stroke of genius it was to run around that fear by turning his face into the face of a baby. Who would have guessed that when Moses heard this great prayer about the face of Yahweh shining on his people, Lord, lift up your countenance and gaze upon us, would he ever have guessed in his wildest fantasies that that face would become the face, innocent, attractive, utterly beguiling face of a baby gazing up at us? We can't help but gaze back at him. Mary, the Mother of God, was the first one to be given this vision. Think of Mary looking down into the face of her child. This gaze, it seems to me, is what she treasures and meditates upon in her heart. And this gaze of the living God, now become the face of a child, is precisely what Mary, the Mother of God, offers to all of us. And God bless you.